This is good because I was very nervous this morning, partly because Bill Shreve, who I've been staying with this week, was kind of staring at me in enthusiasm for what I was about to say, and I don't work well under pressure. So what you'll get now is a very different sermon to this morning. I will vaguely glance at my notes when I get lost. I expect you to tap your watches when you've had enough. Sound fair? It is a real delight and privilege to be here with you this week. This is my fourth week in your diocese. I'm doing a six-week learning placement here. I'm in my third year of curacy back home in a vacant parish. I say parish, in a vacant benefice. You don't have those. So back home, I have four churches that I am responsible for. I'm the boss there. They're being cared for in my absence by some wonderful retired clergy. And it was a privilege this week, actually, to come and be at your Wednesday evening group here, because my four churches back home are part of an eco-church scheme, and we're growing together in our knowledge of how we steward well what we've been given as congregations, but also how we steward in the wider community the creation that God has given into our care. So it's been a real treat to be here. The one thing that isn't a treat is being the visiting. I love preaching, but I'm used to preaching to people that know and love me already. I said this morning, this is my third visiting preaching occasion. 2 weeks ago, I was in Carmel. Last week, I was at Holy Family. And now today, you are my third. And I've been gathering a set of rules along the way for how you preach well when you're visiting new places. The first I've already mentioned, you try and keep it short. Universally acknowledged, that's a good thing in a visiting preacher. You try and keep it short. So as I say, tap when you've had enough, and I may or may not stop. The second thing I've taken great relief in is that I know if I say anything that really ruffles feathers, that you are her responsibility and not mine. So you can wash your hands of me and know that next week I'll be in slow, and the week after that I'll be safely back on my side of the pond. And the third thing is to seek together for common ground. And common ground, I have to say, has been the easiest thing to find while I've been out here, and not all for good reasons. Our churches are in really similar places, searching for numbers, wondering what church looks like now on a Sunday morning, wondering in particular where my generation have gone. I can't tell you because I'm here. Our nations, without getting political, wherever you fit on that spectrum of political belief, both our nations are struggling with these terrifying questions of division and disunity. And then we gather here as God's family to talk about unity, to talk about communion. And then, of course, we have our greatest common ground of all, where I began with my four eco churches. We have our shared common home and the responsibility we hold for it. We began Lent, our season of Lent in Genesis last week, with Adam and Eve given the responsibility to till and to keep, or if I was going to translate that, which I usually would with the other version of those Hebrew words, to tend and to guard. That is our job here in God's creation, to tend and to guard all that God has made. And then Wednesday's group began with a short video by your presiding bishop, by Bishop Curry. And he was talking about today's reading. He began it, God so loved the world. And then he talks about this magnificent creation we are blessed with and our responsibilities in it. That is where he began that talk. God so loved the world. Now you may be very like me. John 3:16 was the first Bible verse I ever learnt. the first Bible verse I ever learnt to recite in Sunday school, where they taught us on that wonderful computer paper, you know, that used to be all linked together with the holes along the top. And they unfolded it until we'd learnt the whole verse. And we learnt the whole verse in complete isolation from the passage it comes from, just that verse. And when we learnt it, we were taught that it meant something about our salvation as Christians. Now, Jesus is talking to Nicodemus, who is an extraordinary leader in the community of Israel. And what he is saying to him is revolutionary, because what he is saying is salvation, God's grace, is so much broader than we make it. So Nicodemus comes to him to talk to him about baptism, to talk to him about who is welcome, who is nourished and blessed by God. And Jesus says to him, "Do you not know this already?" And then he follows up with this extraordinary story of what God is doing in Jesus, which is so much broader than we make it. God so loved the world, the whole world that God has lovingly created. So I was really pleased, as I say, to be part of your Wednesday night group. And I'm really advocating that people go along if they can and become part of it. I'm very conscious that climate change in particular can be a slightly controversial topic. We all kind of fit on a spectrum of belief when we talk about it, from those who aren't sure it's really happening, those who are sure it's happening but it's not our fault, all the way through to those people who, of course, stand up on stages and protest during Super Tuesday. I watched my way through those debates and enjoyed them greatly. And most of us fit somewhere in the middle of that. And even if we are sure we agree climate change is something that is happening, and it is our responsibility as God's children to do something about that, we still live on a spectrum between fear and hope, and then all the way on the other side to a kind of hopelessness that means we say with the psalmist, we look to the hills for our salvation. So it's a tricky issue to talk about, but I do really want to encourage you to be part of the conversation if you can. I'm really hopeful to continue to be part of the conversation with you here, just as I work back home, and I think there's going to be a lot of interchanging of ideas between myself and the Shreves and all kinds of reading lists going one way or the other as we seek to learn together. Because I'm really convicted that the quiet conversations are where change really starts to happen. I said this morning, I'm not sure how Lisa works, but back home, I have four churches, and I can tell you four churches isn't more than enough to manage. So I have a simple rule of thumb, and everyone in my parishes knows if they try to phone me after 9 o'clock at night, I'm not going to answer. I am planning for a lifetime in ministry, so I have to think about looking after myself in amongst the mix of looking after others. Jesus was not so concerned about longevity. He had short-term plans. And so when Nicodemus comes knocking on his door in the middle of the night, he answers and he sits and he speaks with him. Nicodemus was an important man in his community, and if he had spoken openly with Jesus, it would have raised all kinds of questions about his leadership, about his authority, and he wasn't ready for that yet. And that's okay, there is no judgment in that. So I said to others this morning, if you want to come to your creation care group on a Wednesday and sneak in late and sit at the back and just listen, there is no shame in that. There is no judgment in that. But it is a quiet conversation. So Nicodemus comes and speaks to Jesus about baptism. He speaks to Jesus about who belongs in God's community. And then, as I say, Jesus gives him this extraordinary message. He says to him, "How can you not know?" And then he follows up with a story that he couldn't possibly know because Jesus is living it out now. He says, how could you not know? This is the most important thing. God sent his son into the world. And that is who Nicodemus is talking to. And in that quiet conversation at nighttime comes extraordinary transformation. So that the next time we meet Nicodemus is at the foot of the cross, where he gathers his body with Joseph of Arimathea and prepares it for burial. He goes from a quiet conversation at night to this extraordinary, bold declaration of his faith. That is his journey through Lent. And I am praying very much the same for you. In your creation care group, definitely having shared with them, but also just in your lives as individuals in this community, in this season of Lent. I'm praying in all those small conversations you're having with yourselves, with God, with one another, about your lives, about your journey with God. I'm praying for real transformation. I pray that each one of you would know, like Nicodemus, what it feels like to go from a quiet conversation with God into really bold and adventurous faith. That is what our world needs. And it begins, of course, with love. God so loved the world. And John 3:16 is an extraordinary verse, but it is nowhere near as beautiful as the verse that follows. John 3:17. God sent his son into the world, not to condemn the world, but that the world might be saved through him. I believe that it is possible. I have real hope in our world, in God's works of transformation, but I also have real hope in God's people. I believe that you are called to extraordinary transformation, and I am praying for it in this place. I'm praying that that transformation would begin with you. And only then would we turn, not with fear, but with real joy, to say with our psalmist, I turn my eyes to the hills from where my help comes. My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. Amen.